All right, guys. Well, we'll talk about cover crops a little bit right now. And from a cane's perspective, this is the perfect backdrop. You know, this cane was planted a couple days ago. It's packed. But if we get a deluge rain, guess what? Soil's going out in that ditch. There's no doubt about it. Some work done by Dr. Salim said this is the most critical time to try to prevent soil loss. So one of the dynamics that we have to manage is having a cover crop and having a cane crop. You know, a weed is any plant growing out of place. And the last thing we want to do is give up cane yield. So some of our initial work, we said, what is the easiest approach? We broadcast cover crop seed on a fallow field like this. Well, lo and behold, cover crop came up with the cane. It looked beautiful. But what it did is it competed as a weed. We lost in the neighborhood of 5 tons of cane. We definitely don't want to do that. So we started rethinking, how can we approach this? And to me, the most practical approach is trying to plant it in the wheel furrows where these cover crops are not competing directly with the cane. But Mr. Carl brings up a good point. You know, one of our biggest problems are grass weeds in a grass cane crop, and we use a lot of different pre-emerge herbicides. So if you look at this sheet that was handed out, we did some work in St. Gabriel last year. We looked at several different cover crop species, rape, red clover, daikon radish, hairy vetch, winter pea, and sun hemp. And then we took some of the popular herbicide programs we use in cane to look at the impact they would have on them. So we drill seeded these cover crops. After they were drill seeded, we came back and we replicated and put these herbicide treatments. So we looked at S-metolachlor, that's a generic dual product called Strelis 2. Metribuzin, very, very popular herbicide that we use in cane. Tricor is the trade name. Pendimethalin, another old standard herbicide that we use in cane. Prowl. And the last one was Clomazone or Command. So, like I said, these different herbicides have different activities. They all have grass activities, but some of these have activities on broadleaf crops. So the last thing we want to do is plant a cover crop and kill it with the herbicide that we put out to protect the cane from grasses. Like I said, metribuzin is a very, very popular herbicide. And if you look across that column where metribuzin is, you see a lot of hundreds and killing 100% of what we planted. So if you're going to cover crop, metribuzin is not the best herbicide to use on your cane. If you go one spot down and look at Prowl, the pendimethalin, it was a whole lot more tolerant on most of the cover crops, with the exception of red clover. Red clover, all the clover species really don't like any of these herbicide programs that we use in cane. So one of the things that we've looked at in the past is, okay, plant your cane, even if you want to use metribuzin, give it about 6 weeks. That's kind of the break point. You got to give it about 6 weeks. So if you come back here in mid-October and plant those cover crops, a lot of times that herbicide breaks down. That half-life, we get a lot of rain. God knows it was 92 degrees, so the microbial degradation is rocking and rolling right now on our soils. So they don't last forever. That's why we have to apply multiple times. We have to put out grass herbicides. But it's trying to grow these cover crops in a way that is beneficial to the soil, but not a negative impact on that cover crop. So if you flip that sheet over to the back page, some of the initial work we did in the New Iberia area with Ricky Gonsolin, we had a very diverse group of broad cover crops, including winter pea, hairy vetch, and some radish. It established well. It ended up taking over the whole row at the end of the winter. So we looked at termination timings. So when we terminated that crop with brash, which is 2,4-D in dicamba, and our metribuzin like we typically put in the spring, it did a beautiful job every time we went to terminate. It did its job. But if you look at this sheet, look at the January 5th, 25th terminations versus the February 16th versus the March 8th. So, you know, these are 3 weeks apart. Boom, boom, boom. If you look at that stock population, what do you see? You see a constant decrease in the number of sugarcane stalks per acre. So it can compete as a weed. So the moral of the story, we have to terminate early. So early February or late January is when you want to be targeting this. We don't want to be doing this in March, even though the cane is not as established as you'd like. We got to give time for that biomass to die, break down, and let that cane crop come and be vigorous. And you can see that same relationship with stalk height. You know, our tallest stalk height is when we terminate it earliest, and it decreases as we go down. So I think we got some good options here. But, you know, it's a balance game. Life is a balance game. It's a balance game. Ideally, if I had to do it and I had unlimited resources, what I really have been liking is going with a daikon radish and rape on the hip of the row. And I'd love to plant like an Austrian winter pea and a hairy vetch down the center of the row, because those are vining species. So you have a leguminous species in the middle fixing some nitrogen. Then you have deep-rooted crops where it'll break some of that soil compaction and let some percolation, but it won't encroach onto the cane. So that's kind of what if I got to dream up an ideal situation, that's what I'd love to do. So with that, any questions?
Can you say that one more time?
So on the hip of the row, either daikon radish with a mixture of rape, and down the center of the wheel furrow, I'd like to have a vining one, like a Austrian winter pea and hairy vetch mix down that drill. So, I think about how we plant soybeans on the top of cane beds with three drills. I don't know how we do it in this arrangement with them offset. I'm not that smart. I'm not a farmer.
So you don't have a planter?
I have a single row planter is what I have. Okay. So that drills on the top. But I hadn't. One of the things that I've noticed over my time, just like with cane, that soil seed contact is so important. So anytime we've drilled the cover crops, we've gotten a much better establishment than if we broadcast and just leave it to be. Now, even if we broadcast and tickle it, it's great. But this on top of the ground, you better even this fresh soil.
Okay.
We did some work last year with Ricky Gosland, Blair Hebert in New Iberia, and side by side, he came in with a fertilizer cart and put a little fertilizer with his cover crop, and I came and I broadcast it, and I forget the name of the tool, but basically he just reshaped. So this is in a fallow field, he just reshaped, and where I just spread it, he had probably three times the amount of cover crop that germinated than I did. So.
Okay. All right, so Al, let me ask a question about the timing of the planting of a cover crop.
Uh-huh.
What is, in a perfect world, you know, this field was planted a few days ago and sprayed with, or will be sprayed with some Syncor, let's use that. So you gotta wait, wait 6-8 weeks, or 6 weeks.
6 weeks, minimum.
Wait 6 weeks.
And so here's the other caveat you gotta understand. To get critical biomass, these things need to be in by mid-October. Because when you get into November, you're just not gonna get the vegetative growth.
Okay.
I planted these things as early as July, and you say, they won't survive. They will survive. Every one of them survived. But then you got army worms and every other insect pest you can imagine. The sweet spot to me is mid-September to mid-October. That's where we've done our best, had our best success with this project.
And you feel comfortable with getting enough vegetative growth from September? Let's round it. You said September 15th to October 15th. So October 1st, you planted this field in your recipe of clovers and whatnot. Radishes.
I wouldn't plant clover, but I'd plant radishes and winter peas.
Okay.
And stuff,
yeah. You plant that here October 1st, and October's is not a, that's our driest month of the year on average, but you do get a rain quickly after you plant it. Let's assume all that. And come January, how tall is your green matter out here, your cover crop? Is it enough? Does it have enough time to do good? Do what you're trying to do?
It absolutely has enough. And Mr. Coral, I don't have the data with me, but I'll send it to you. But with some of the work we did last year, and it's on our sugarcane website, what actually showed how much biomass, dry biomass. And I want to say we were talking almost 2 tons of, it was at least a ton of dry biomass. And we calculated how much N, P, and K that we fixed, and it was pretty outrageous. I mean, it was better than 60 units of nitrogen that we had accumulated planting at the right time. Picked up some sulfur, some zinc, some of the microbes.
Potassium too. It picked up a lot of potassium, nitrogen, and calcium. Those are the major or prime macronutrients that we saw a big contribution coming up from the mixes of cover crop species that we've been planting in the sugar model farm.
Okay, so how wide a drill are you trying to get planted?
If I got a plant, I'd like to be on that row hip right here where you don't have any cane.
Right there?
Right there. And I'd like to have one in the middle.
You want the Austin winter peas down here?
Right here, because they're going to bush, they're going to vine. They're going to be 4 or 5 foot wide by the end of it.
Okay. But you also want to get some seed right here.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. The John Deere planter engineers better get after it. Okay. Because the spreader isn't going to work if you just sling some of these seeds out.
I mean, you'll have some germinate, but to me, you need much higher seeding rates. It's just not nearly as ideal of a situation. The technology we have at the Sugar Research Station, I inherited a old planter from Jimmy Flanagan. Brenda's used that planter and many researchers, and we plant anything from corn, and it's just a brush planter, and it doesn't have a whole lot of fine tuning. It's not like an air planter where you can precision plant seeds and such, so we tend to plant them a little heavier than we would like to. But I think with an air planter and a good engineer, you really can... A fava bean is a great, great fixer of nitrogen. But all the research I've done says they're using garlic planters to plant fava beans. But I was like, man, this would be an ideal. But again, you got to have a way to practically do it in a very efficient way. But I think that'd be another good fit for a legume cover crop. And you know, you brought up the aspect of the high nitrogen prices, and y'all were talking about that. I actually have some growers in North Louisiana that's really interested in this, because you know, if you can pick up 20 pounds of nitrogen with a legume and terminate it at a timely standpoint, so within a 2 to 3 weeks, you start releasing the nutrients that these cover crops pick up after you terminate them. So if you could theoretically do it especially if your cover crops are not competing with your cane, if you can control what's in the wheel furrow a little bit later and have that nitrogen available for the plant, that's a cost savings.
Yeah.
So that's some of the kind of thought process.
We're planting, of course, I'm in the northern part of the cane belt, but we're able to plant soybeans and make pretty consistently high yields. And one of the reasons driving that is, now the old school was, the number was 15 units of nitrogen you're going to get from planting the soybean crop. And so that's $15 right there. If it's $1 a unit.
Dr. Fultz is the microbiologist. But the other thing you do is you never think about that microbial community. But when you plant a cane crop after a cane crop after a cane crop, you start selecting the bacteria and pathogens that feed on the roots of cane and become negative. Whenever we incorporate cover crops, especially a broadleaf cover crop, you change up that microbial community in the soil. Okay. You know, old ground versus new ground. I mean, yes, there may be a little bit more nutritious, but really what Dr. Hoy found is that microbial community in that old ground is very selective as what lives on cane and is pathogenic versus a healthy community that's diverse. So that, you know, just another big benefit of cover crop.